Okay, Jane.
Okay, thank you, Hans. The next paper to consider is Agenda Paper 9, which is on the Rate Regulated Activities Project. This project, I guess, the first thing to highlight is it's not a research project. It's been through the research phase, and we did have a discussion paper issued in September 2014. And that discussion paper described different types of rate regulation and tried to identify the types of rate regulation that maybe created rights and obligations that we should be looking at to see whether those rights and obligations translate to assets and liabilities that maybe should be recognised in the financial statements if they're not currently recognised. The discussion paper also included some possible routes forward for accounting standard setting if the board was to decide to go down that route. So it talked about the possibility of retaining the existing predominant practice where many of these rights and obligations created by the regulation are not reflected directly in the financial statements as regulatory assets or liabilities. It talked about perhaps going down an intangible asset model, trying to capture the value of the net rights or obligations of the regulation as a single line item. It talked about the possibility of a disclosure-only type of approach. It also talked about an approach where we could perhaps look to build an accounting model that did reflect some of these rights and obligations created by a particular type of rate regulation that we called defined rate regulation, for want of a better title. And the discussion paper talked about two possibilities for the way to build that model. One concentrated on making adjustments to costs and reflecting changes in the timing of recognition of costs and expenses through profit or loss, depending on the regulatory agreement. The other approach was to focus on the rate adjustments that the regulation builds in and perhaps use a revenue adjustment type of model using the principles that are in IFRS 15 on revenue from contracts with customers, although we acknowledge at that time that model doesn't fit exactly because we have this three-way relationship in the regulatory environment between the rate regulator, the regulated entity, and the regulated entity's customers. And the feedback that we got from that project then was that we do need to do some more work in this area to identify what are those rights and obligations and what's the best way to faithfully represent them through financial statements. We haven't brought a huge amount back to the board since we had the initial assessment of the feedback. We've been working more in the background. We've had three meetings now with the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum to try and explore the rights and obligations, and in particular, how they tie into identifying performance and what do we mean by performance in a rate-regulated environment when we're looking at this extra relationship between the entity and the rate regulator and the rate regulator and the entity's customers. Because it's not a research project, it's on the work plan on the page of major projects, there wasn't a specific question asked in the agenda consultation request for views. So we didn't ask people specifically to rank the project, we didn't ask them specifically to make comments on the project. The only mention really in the request for views, we gave a list of major projects and asked a very general question about the balance of the work plan as a whole and how the major projects fitted into that. Despite that, we did get about a fifth of the respondents to the agenda consultation, about a fifth of the comment letters did specifically refer to the rate regulated activities project. In terms of ranking high or low priority, the numbers were split almost evenly. So we're not quite sure what to do with such split views. The reasons for the high or the low priorities in paragraphs 30 and 31 of Agenda Paper 9, Those who ranked the project as high and or urgent focused on the absence of guidance in IFRS standards and the diversity in existing practice that has resulted partly because of our temporary standard, IFRS 14, on regulatory deferral accounts, which allows first-time adopters of IFRS to grandfather their existing policies, if they have any, for recognising regulatory assets or regulatory liabilities. People that rank the project as high really thought that it's not tenable to have a temporary standard like that for a long period of time, focusing on that narrow population of entities. Those who rank the project as low, again, coming back to Cheng Wu's point, some of these were respondents in industries that are not rate regulated, so saw this as a very narrow population of entities that may be affected. Ranked it as low importance because it's not a major issue in their particular activities. And a few respondents also reduced the priority of the project because of its complexity, thinking that it would take a lot of resource to come up with a viable solution, and because of the relative perceived narrow scope, weren't sure that the balance of resource to the benefit supported a high priority project for this. I've also listed in the paper from paragraphs 32 onwards, there were quite a few references in the responses to the agenda consultation that have been mentioned in the high level papers on the responses about factors for the board to consider in prioritising projects more generally, and several of those did strike a chord in terms of the rate regulated activities project. So I'm not sure whether these people had rate regulation in mind when they were giving these factors to consider, but they certainly struck a chord as I was reading them. So I've highlighted some of those more general things. So the gaps in IFRS requirements, increasing comparability by reducing carve-outs or temporary standards, etc. Again, the online survey, equally, we didn't mention rate regulated activities as a specific project. We didn't ask specifically for responses there. So we got very few respondents there. And again, the views were mixed. We did get, I think it was 5 respondents putting it in their top 3 list of important projects. But equally, we had others that ranked it as low priority. But the numbers there are very small and hard to say that they would be representative. So again, we're not asking you to make decisions at this meeting, just giving you the opportunity to make comments or ask questions if there's any further information you would like to help you make decisions on prioritising the project in due course.
Can I just say there's one slight anomaly about the comment letter data, and that's that a quarter of the people, or a fifth of the people, 23 people commented on it one way or another, but of those, only a third of them actually ranked the project itself. So there were a number of people who didn't provide a ranking because that hadn't been requested, but provided comments. And a couple of those comments just, there are a couple of jurisdictions which say that they weren't sure why it had been put on the major projects agenda, because it affected relatively few jurisdictions in their view. These were standard setters. And there were some people who mentioned that they thought that the project had taken a large number of resources. Interestingly, 2 investors were generally not in favor of this project, or thought that perhaps one respondent suggested that a disclosure only option might solve the problem. How so there's quite a lot of comments in there, but they didn't affect the rankings or weren't reflected in the rankings.
How did they get to the view that it's taken a lot of resources? It's hardly taken any.
I think they were thinking both of outreach as well as ours.
I take it as a compliment that they think there's a lot of resources.
You're just a minor resource.
I'm just a minor resource. Yeah.
You're tiny.
I'm very small.
Not a big resource. Yeah.
They're all.
just wanted to ask a quick question here. I'm correct in saying that the current practice around rate regulated is fairly well developed, albeit that it's the non-recognition of the assets and liabilities for the most part, and there's not a lot of diversity in practice. Is that right on this one?
Generally, that's right. The predominant existing practice is not to recognise the regulatory balances, which is why I think the board, at intervals over quite a number of years now, have had several requests to revisit that predominant practice. During our research, we have found it's perhaps not as consistently applied as we perhaps first thought. We have identified, albeit a relatively small number of companies that do recognise some of these balances, and each one will have a specific reason why they've got those balances. So a lot of the diversity is coming from now. We've got IFRS 14, so as first-time adopters come in, if they're coming in from places where their local gap has allowed the recognition of these regulatory
balances. It's almost an institutionalised diversity, if you like. We've allowed it by putting in 14. Patrick raised the issue this morning about the solution to some of these projects. Some of the projects that we're looking at might be a disclosure-only approach. I think you mentioned it in your tee-up, and April just mentioned it. Just from the viewpoint you've got in terms of the project so far, is disclosure only likely to be a lot less work, do you think? And is it something that we could think about as a fairly quick solution to the project?
We've asked this question twice. When we were looking at doing a temporary standard, we discussed this with the Advisory Council and others, and disclosure only was addressed as a specific possibility. On balance, people felt that wasn't the ideal solution because it really didn't get to the heart of the issue, which is are these regulatory balances really assets or liabilities? And also there was quite
it isn't the heart of the issue for those preparers that they want the different performance reporting.
Well, it kind of ties in together. So the rights and obligations drive what do we mean by performance,
yeah,
which drives how do we report.
Yes, but their main motivation is not the balance sheet, yeah. But it's the performance.
But they do acknowledge that, yeah, that the performance is driven by the obligations and the rights that are in the regulatory agreement. But you're right, Hans, it is the reflection of that through the income statement that's primary.
So that's why disclosure doesn't help them.
And maybe if I can interpret your answer then, what you're essentially saying is that we should be careful of looking at disclosure as an easy answer for some of these, not because disclosure is not necessarily easy to do, but because the level of opposition might be as big.
I think it's a combination of both. There's partly that, and partly that. There's quite a few comments came through with the discussion paper as well, that there is a lot of diversity in the mechanics of rate regulation in different jurisdictions.
But that you could still solve through disclosure. But obviously people who are motivated around this are never going to tell us, yeah, disclosure only, that's fine.
But also there's a drive against, yeah. A lot of companies do disclose some of this information, but it's non-GAAP information, and there's pressure on how reliable is some of this non-GAAP, how consistent and comparable is some of this.
So I guess the question for me is, if I think about this project, possibly even more if I think about some of the other things, and extractives and a few others come to mind, where at the back of my mind it feels like we might be able to get a fairly quick win by coming up with a disclosure framework that then is not GAAP, it's in fact GAAP, and it allows people to get a common understanding of what's happening in the numbers without necessarily having to go through the same type of exercise as you go through if you're dealing with recognition and measurement. I think what you're saying is from the experience you've had on this project based on the DP and other things, we should caution ourselves from seeing that as too quick a quick win.
Yeah.
Well, I don't listen, so it's not going to make these people happy, but it might make us happy. and it might be a good solution for a very difficult problem that we are perhaps not spending huge resources on, but a lot of time, whereas the trustees have told us to get this out of the way as quickly as possible. Yeah. And I don't see the beginning of that yet. Sue?
It might be something to look at here, although we did ask about it in the discussion paper, so we'd have to be careful to be responsive to the feedback that we got. But I agree that there will be circumstances when disclosure is helpful as a first step to get information out there and to help move forward, at least in terms of thinking and consistency and comparability. But I do think that we do need to be a little bit careful, because I think that often people think that disclosure-only solutions are all cost and not much benefit from a preparer perspective. So it helps investors a lot, but I don't think we should start thinking about it as being a solution in too many places. It might be one here, but more generically.
Also, we'd have to make a decision, wouldn't we, if we went to disclosure-only, as to whether they can leave assets and liabilities that are already there. So at the moment, we've got diversity. Some companies reporting assets and liabilities and some not. So even if we had disclosure only, we'd have to make a decision on whether they had them on or not, and then that opens up all the other questions anyway.
Martin?
Yeah, for me was also 27 paragraph interesting, that people who responded, really there was not arguing about if there should be assets or liabilities. Their concern was that we have really to come to a conclusion on this project, and that is, I think, for me also the main point, because we are working now for this for some years, and for me it is not obvious that we can come up with any solution for recognition and measurement, because it is also a changing environment, because man, it thinks the scope is very difficult here, and it is changing and changing and changing, right, regulation, and if we maybe have fixed something, somebody come up with why we are not, and I personally don't see any solution which is obvious and that we can solve it in the near future. And also another example was, man, I had, when I was in Brussels last time, there was also people from the rate regulating industry, and they said, we are really concerned because we have to take resources to follow all your discussions, and but we are really not interested in this project because we don't recognize it and we don't want, but we have to follow since years now. And that is concerning me. And I think I think during the next months or that few months, we have to take a decision. Is it really an obvious solution which we can think, okay, we can have a solution in the next 2 to 3 years? Otherwise, I think that is a project which we maybe say, okay, we wait another, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, if maybe the rate regulation scheme has developed differently, and then we try again. But I think to continue with that, I think there is not, I think, which is very promising if we have resource constraints.
And that was my comment, not your point, that the resources that were being taken up weren't our resources, they were other people's resources.
Yeah.
Just on that point, though, we do get a lot of people offering resources. So, you know, the views are very mixed in that, you know, people, and the reason for paragraph 27, people don't want this to just keep drifting and drifting, and we have IFRS 14 for, you know, many, many years. They want a resolution. Whatever way we land,
so
they want a resolution.
So I don't think that can mean another discussion paper. I mean, we have to take full responsibility for where we are, because you are with this project where you are because of us.
Yeah.
But I find it very hard to stomach. That we've been going around in circles, and is there a discussion paper in sight now? Or
well, I think we've been making some good progress. I know Michael probably wants to maybe mention
yes,
ASAP and
that's right. I mean, we've obviously, as Jane mentioned, we've had 3 meetings with ASAP over the last 12 months. And so what Jane and I and Kanhar have been working on is taking that input from ASAF and seeing where does that lead us in terms of a possible accounting model. And so amongst the next steps that I would see, if you wanted us to continue in this direction, would be to bring that possible accounting model to you that takes that input from the ASAF and says, look, you know, taking a sort of a revenue type approach, what do we think this could look like? And then obviously you could decide whether that's something that is a goer or not.
Well, that's what I would envision, and not to come up with a possible solution the board saying, well, it could be yes or no, but let's try it out and send out a discussion paper. I would really like to see a paper that says we feel comfortable or not, that we feel comfortable in going in this direction. Do you agree, board? And not drawn out over 10 sessions, but one at the most, two. You must by now have an idea where you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been doing in the background.
And if the board then can go in that direction, go for exposure drafts, and then we'll see if it fails or not. But to go through yet another round of a discussion paper, and then the whole misery of starting the whole series of meetings about setting the standard, I don't know. This is just ridiculous.
I think one of the advantages of perhaps doing a discussion paper rather than an exposure draft is because of the complexity. Sometimes a discussion paper is easier to take people through all of the steps and the model, but I think that's a decision maybe we take when we're further down the line.
After showing the model.
Stephen.
I think I agree with you, Hans. To my mind, disclosure only won't do this. I mean, we can't leave IFRS 14 outstanding, and disclosure only seems to me would leave IFRS 14 outstanding. We've created the diversity in practice. I know it's only first-time adopters versus everybody else, but we have created diversity, and I think it's our responsibility to get rid of it. So to my mind, this is a priority for us to fulfill our promise that IFRS 14 was only temporary.
Mary?
Several thoughts and maybe one question for follow-up, Jane. One is that an approach that's a revenue-based versus a cost-based would be different from the regulatory accounting models used, rate-regulated activity accounting models used under national GAAPs in most countries, from what we know. Thinking about the last ASAP meeting, Tom's discussion about the U.S. approach, which is really cost-based on the asset side, but revenue-based on the liability side, because of the way the mechanics work. So I think one thing we'd have to think about is, if we develop a standard that is consistent with the feedback from the first, DP, this would represent a change for almost everybody, because the other feedback we've had is that there are a lot of different national versions of rate-regulated accounting, but they all are pretty similar at their core in terms of how they approach it. So I think, that was the overwhelming feedback from the first discussion paper, that go in that direction. But I think then
go in what direction?
Go in the revenue based direction overall. Sorry, I think
so,
we
so a completely different approach than existing
right.
schemes. Yeah.
But whenever in the early days people say a really different approach seems like a good idea, and then as it gets closer, you get a lot more pushback.
So let's not give them a pain free. Way out to completely change their mind again. I mean,
well, I
it should be more take it or leave it.
It may be that, I think we have to be aware that it's not like we're saying will we or won't we import a known model. It's a significant project, and that maybe is a bit more testing as we go along before we go all the way to an ED and say take it or leave it, which might be the reason for a more focused discussion paper, not should we do A, should we do B, should we do C, but we're heading in this direction, this is what it means, speak now before we go ahead and develop an ED. That's one thing. Two is the piece of information that we seem to be able to get soon, but I haven't seen us talk about getting, is some initial feedback from the application of IFRS 14. I agree we cannot leave something in place that has one approach for, people who came in after it was issued in a different approach for everybody who is already using IFRS. But if we identify that a number of entities adopted IFRS 14 and the feedback is that's a great balance because we get the impact of rate regulation, but we also get comparability with IFRS, then maybe we should think about, is there a way to adapt IFRS 14 for all rather than limiting it to first-time adopters? If people say it's useless and nobody's taken it up, I think that kills that. We didn't have that available when we did the last DP because, you know, we were just finalizing IFRS 14. I don't, that's a request for a piece of information. And I think when we think about how many resources is this project taking, we should be thinking about things like ASAF and the consultative group and, you know, our discussions with some of our standing advisory groups like Global Payers Forum and CMAC, because I think that makes visible that, you know, an amount of time, even if it's not board time, and maybe even increases the perception of how much time it's taken.
I'm a little confused about your comments on IFRS 14.
Yeah.
My recollection was we had some countries who were about to adopt where there was diversity or sometimes not diversity in practice. So, for instance, in Canada, there was diversity of opinion, at least, on how to treat these things. And in, say, India, there was a large take-up of having assets and liabilities. But there wasn't sort of around the world an agreement on what was the right way to do it. And our reason for doing that was because we couldn't come up with the answer either. The general consensus was you shouldn't have the assets and liabilities. So in Europe, for instance, they having adopted IFRS, they don't have them. And so the intention was to give everybody a breather until we could make up our mind what the right answer was. I don't think there was ever any great consensus as to what the right answer was from anybody.
It wasn't that, but it was the point that we were hearing from those jurisdictions, not just from the preparers, but also from users of financial statements, that it was important for them to get information about how rate regulation affected those entities. And so therefore, the conclusion we reached, the temporary solution, was to say, you've got to do your financial statements as if you're with no special accounting, and then a single line item adjustment, you could call it an overlay, you know, thinking of another discussion we're going to have, at the bottom, so that the effect of rate regulation is isolated in a single, here's the impact. If we get feedback from the users of financial statements of, that's all we need, you don't have to take this and come up with special measurement models for how you measure revenue, how you defer costs, et cetera, et cetera.
But I think you're missing the point that some people will have that adjustment and some people won't.
Right.
Because there's two different treatments.
Right.
So you might get from those countries that are new adopters and have used IFRS 14 that reaction, but for the rest of the world, there'll be a lot of users saying, well, we've never had that information and we don't want it.
Possible. I wondered if there's some easy, useful information. I don't want a big research project. I just want to. Has anybody taken it up? Has there been any comment?
Yeah, I'm trying to do that.
Well, it was available to them, but did they actually use it?
Beryl.
I just wanted to confirm my understanding, Jane, in terms of what the status would be of IFRS 14. And I think Ian touched on it a little bit. I'd understood this as a bridging method until such time as the board came up with a longer-term solution, in part because we didn't want to see those entities coming on in new jurisdictions having to double change, take all the assets off their balance sheet and potentially bring them all on. But I assume that whatever we decide to do with this project, and that might be a disclosure only, it might be a fully-fledged project, it might be to do nothing. Once we've made that decision, that would suggest we withdraw 14, and 14 no longer. So
yeah.
I think that's an important just underline to remember.
Yes.
It disappears, and so the diversity created by 14 disappears, even if we decide to do nothing.
Yeah. I don't think we can just say nothing.
No.
We have to have a positive statement as to,
well,
these are not assets and liabilities.
I presume that the positive statement would be a referral back to the conceptual framework, which has been the basis on which Many jurisdictions have concluded that there aren't assets.
We can't go back to the current uncertainty about whether assets and liabilities. We've got to solve this once.
Perhaps to ask this question from the other end then. I'd kind of understood coming into this that there was not uncertainty amongst the jurisdictions that had already adopted IFRS. They were not recognising assets and liabilities.
But there was still debate.
There was a lot of debate and a lot of controversy.
Yeah, controversy, but usually clarity that under...
Yeah, so for example...
That there was... That
yeah. Yes?
There was lots of uncertainty. The fact that jurisdictions that adopt IFRS before IFRS 14 was issued, they accepted with reluctance, but they never agreed there was not uncertainty. And most of them, they accepted. The problem is, and some mentioned that, not many jurisdictions. Problem is, those are limited industries, but huge industries in most countries. And there was uncertainty. And they only did what I would refer to auditors, what auditors demand them to do because of the potential impacts. However, they never accepted. They understand there is uncertainty, and they always communicate to the investors using other information.
That's something different, Amaru. There was no acceptance, but there was no uncertainty that these assets and liabilities could not be recognized.
No. There was uncertainty. There was uncertainty. It's not clear in our conceptual framework. It's not clear that those are not assets and liabilities. The issue was in Europe, because Europe started the process in 2005, and they agreed those were not assets and liabilities. In this region, there was no diversity. But other regions, when they became part of our family, they started to put pressure in the conceptual framework. And that's why we are where we are. That's the issue.
But in Brazil, assets and liabilities were not being recognized.
No, because of this, because we told them you can't. They never accepted.
Yeah.
But when we issued IFRS 14, and then I agree totally and integrally with Stephen, we opened the door.
Yeah, I know.
And that's why we needed to...
Prior to that, the people disliked it, but there was no uncertainty about the treatment.
There has to be, because we issued an exposure draft proposing to recognize assets and liabilities. So presumably that was in accordance with our framework.
Yeah. Exactly.
As I understand it, in Canada, the big four were split 3-1 as to whether there are assets.
And I think, I know Philippe's desperate to come in here, but yeah, there's been several requests over the years, and when Europe came in, the question that Europe asked through the Interpretations Committee is, can we grandfather in the policies that were very similar to US GAAP? And I think that was not the right question. And the response to the Interpretations Committee was quite nuanced, I think, which was you can't import US GAAP as it stands because there are some direct conflicts in some aspects of US GAAP with our conceptual framework and with existing standards. But it's only particular aspects, but there are much wider questions about other aspects. Is it consistent or not? So there is a huge amount of uncertainty still.
I think Europe never took any position. It was not a role, but practice established itself relatively conservatively to not recognize. That was general practice. It's still today general practice, but there is no official position, to my knowledge, by the standard setters, by EFRAG, or by Europe itself. So this is why there is some degree of uncertainty based on the analysis of the conceptual framework. Just it's practice that there is no recognition today in most cases. With a couple of exceptions, maybe in certain countries.
Let's try to come to a conclusion. Chang-Wu?
Thank you. Just a very, maybe some technical issue. It seems to me, we might need another discussion paper, because this issue is a really current framework, current standards. They cannot provide a solution to this issue. It seems to me, so this is a kind of a new area of the accounting transactions. So our conceptual framework is not so wide enough to cover this kind of issue. So IFRS 15, that's, I guess, the wrong standard we we can rely on. Maybe if we can do better relying on it, maybe if we travel, maybe that may be the better. No, yeah, I'm saying that nobody is proposing a reasonable solution to this issue because this is a regulatory effect, not a normal market transactions. That's why, you know, the chain is trying to solve this issue for a long time, but any solution, any alternative was rejected because our conceptual framework, current framework, is not good enough to cover everything here. Another thing is US GAAP is also very narrow scoped in a standard that just covers very small amount of regulatory transactions, not so covering enough, wide enough. So that is another obstacle to develop a good standard here. We can insist, just recognize some kind of intangible assets, we can insist, regardless of that does not, even though that does not meet our conceptual frame of definition, but we can insist, but we should avoid as much as possible, and we have to develop a new good solution for these transactions, but I doubt it. Actually, based on current framework. So that's why I'm saying we need a lot of time.
Yeah.
Back. Just quickly, in the GPF meeting, I heard that one good suggestion, which is slightly consistent with what Changu said. The gentleman, the background is a mining company. He said it's similar to the license they have. So it's like IFRIC 12, we can call it a license asset. And then it could solve a lot of problem of rate-regulated industry have. Because if we try to tweak the revenue number, there might be a lot of conflict with current IFRS 15. And if we try to do the profit and loss statement based on that top line, it would confuse a lot of profit and loss statement. But if you capture the license given by the government, then it would provide kind of overlay information so that investor can understand what is the situation if we come up with a good disclosure. So these are one of the ideas when you discuss or when you propose something, one of the ideas.
Well, I would propose the following, because I truly believe we cannot go on like this, and we need to bring this to some sort of clarity as soon as possible. So what I would like the staff to do, which you would probably do anyway, is to bring to the board a rather fully developed proposal about this is the direction in which we want to go, and not with three variants, but just, you know, the preferred solution. You must have it in your head by now. If you don't, then I think that spells ill future for this project. Then the board can look at it and make it, as we always do, tentative decision. But I think at that point the board should feel confident enough to either go in that direction or to tell you, let's stop. And if we go in that direction, then you should feel confident enough to with your future work that what you are going to develop is probably going to be accepted by us. Let's see at that point whether the follow-up should be a discussion paper or a standard. But in either case, I would not like a discussion paper to go out with the message, well, this is one of the things we are considering, but we are open to other ideas. Please, let's have another go at it. If after all this work we are not able, and I strongly have the feeling that the board has a great lack of confidence in going in any direction at this moment. If by that next meeting where we discuss this paper, if we still don't have that feeling, we should take our consequences. So the gist of what I'm saying is we need to come to a go, no-go decision very quickly.
Yeah. I think it be worthwhile as well if the analysis could focus on which jurisdictions are most affected.
Well, that's yes, and if you could, with all the work that you've done, if you could give us an overview of what is the state of play in the world, how many big, how, what is the size of the sector that is going to be affected, that would be very helpful.
It'll be affected one way or the other. So if we decide there are assets and liabilities, it's a great big lot that'll be affected. If we decide there aren't, there's a smaller lot that will be affected.
No, but it's also the size of the sector that is going to be affected or not.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be a very accurate reflection because some of these, the actual companies themselves have got some parts of their business are rate regulated and other parts are not rate regulated, and trying to find the numbers for the split of that is likely to be very difficult. But we can give you a big picture type of analysis as best we can.
Stephen?
Hans, do you mean by no-go leave IFRS 14 in place?
Yeah. No, that will have to be withdrawn. If we decided that we're not going to create a standard for this issue, then the IFRS 14 has to disappear.
Don't forget IFRS 14 has got disclosures in it as well, and I don't think they're all tied just to the sort of peculiarities of IFRS 14. Well, so
at least in the shape that it is now, it will have to go.
I just think we have to make a positive statement. We can't just withdraw it. It'll just create diversity in practice, and there'll be a hole in respective disclosures.
It'll be Hans, like withdrawing a brick
three. Hans is hoping that we're going to agree with Jane's model.
Your proposal would be that we have a limited disclosure requirement.
Well, there were some good things in IFRS 14 just on disclosure, so I wouldn't want to lose those.
Okay, well, we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
Two 45.